Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
All right, we're going to switch our focus from football chat to cycling, because I'm delighted to be joined in studio by Nico Roach. Nico, you're very welcome. You've travelled up from Wexford because unfortunately you lost your national time trial championship down there this week. I wonder, are you over that disappointment yet?
I have, definitely. In fairness, I was beaten by a strong, very strong Ryan Mullen. I gave it all. It was probably one of my better time trials that I've done over the last few years. So, you know, to be beaten yesterday, it's like, all right, I could not have done better. He was just quicker. So no regrets, and congrats to him.
Yeah, sometimes you're just beaten by the better man of the day, and you just have to hold your hands up. And look, as you say, I mean, well, it was one of your better time trials. That's not necessarily where your bread and butter is. You still have your elite road race title to defend on Sunday, so you'll be hoping for a bit more better fare then.
Hopefully, even though Sunday is going to be as hard because it's a much more open race, especially this year, the course is pretty flat to attract more numbers at the start. So it's going to be a tough one, but you know, I'll give it everything. I really want to defend the title. I've worked so hard every year to come back and try and get the jersey, because it means a lot to me to have the jersey on the big races and be there representing Ireland with that jersey around the world. And I won't give it away so easy.
Yeah, I've seen the photos of you with the new jersey, particularly once BMC Racing put it together for you. Do you have an input into how it's going to look, how the sponsorship and the logos will look? And because you're ultimately the guy who's going to be wearing this jersey, representing Ireland all over the world, as you say.
So actually, it's Cycling Ireland who has the input over the jersey. Okay. So there is a protocol jersey, and I can only kind of adapt it a little bit. The original protocol jersey has a few shamrocks on it. And I just asked if I could just one shamrock. I thought it was already enough. So they choose the Petono, the green, you know, the use of, well, the choice of not having the orange. I have no control or output on that. They give us the design, and then we have to adapt the sponsors around it. So obviously then BMC will look at their logo and where does it fit the best, and it's usually, you know, just underneath the shamrock.
Yeah, which is exactly where it is. What's it like being back over here riding? I mean, how much sort of feedback do you get when you do get the opportunity to come back over and ride here? Because we don't see enough of you, I guess, is what Irish cycling fans would say.
Yeah, well, I try and come as much as I can. You know, I spend about anything from 20 to 30 days a year in Ireland. I usually spend a good week here in June, and then I say a good week in October and another week in November. So I try and come as much as I can. Obviously, it's not easy, and I was here for 5 days as well this year in May. So I do come quite a lot, and well, not a lot, but as much as I can.
Yeah.
And when I come here, I try and make the most of myself available for the people around me. And I know it's important, and this is one of the reasons why I make the effort to come back for the Nationals. Because although I'm there for a race, you know, it's quite funny because most of the people I see before were taking photographs and signing autographs, and I'm with their kids and everything. And then next thing you know, we're racing each other for the title, and after the race, we're back taking photographs again. So, you know, it's something that for me, it's important to give time to the fans that I have here, because, you know, they've given me so much support over the years when I was racing abroad, coming into the Tour de France, coming to the other races. So many Irish flags, and for a long time I was one of the only ones with my cousin out there, and it was amazing, and I always said thank you to about all that support that I had over the years. So as much as I can, I try and give them as much time as I can.
Yeah, it must be pretty incredible if you're halfway up the Alpe d'Huez and you just see this lone tricolour, some madman or woman just on the corner or the brow of a hill and doing their absolute best to make sure they're visible to you. Does it give you just a little bit of a lift as you're going up that hill?
Definitely.
Which, particularly when you need it most.
Yeah, definitely. It always gave me a smile. And like I said, I feel privileged to have the support. I always said the Irish were one of the best supporters in the world, in sports in general. And it's, for me, I always felt privileged, and I just love it. You know, there's they come to see me at the start, at the finish, like you say, on random corners on the climbs. You know, they travel to go and see the race. It's I absolutely love it.
Yeah, I guess it might help you forget the pain for at least half a second. I guess your entire season still has to come to pass, really, because you're building towards the Grand Tours, and this is the business end of the season for you with the Tour de France and the Vuelta. They're looming large on the horizon now. But overall, how have you felt the season has gone for you so far?
Well, just as you pointed, this year I sacrificed a little bit the start of the season. It's been a very poor start of the season compared to other years where I was already a lot more readier. But looking forward to the start now, really, with the Tour and then San Sebastian, the Vuelta, the Worlds, and the Italian Classics. So I have a busy end of second part of the year, and this is where I need to perform more than I have to perform. Is I just have to show that I'm still in the game. You know, like I said, I purposely sacrificed the first couple of months to try and arrive at 100% of the Tour. Did things a bit differently, a bit slower, and now I just have to, well, hopefully that make it be right, you know, and make those sacrifices work rather than trying to go and race hard for every race and be competitive. So hopefully now it's kicking in together, and I'll be there in the Tour for the team and for Richie when he needs me.
Yeah, I guess the Tour probably means even more to you now because you're 33 2 days after the first stage in Dusseldorf.
That's right.
And you're coming through a year where you were left out of the Sky team for the Tour last year. So for the first time in a long time, you had to watch the Tour like the rest of us, sitting at home watching it on the TV. And imagine that was not a pleasant experience.
It was not a pleasant experience. You know, I had become at a stage where I felt that I was part of the Tour, you know, kind of thing. And I was in the bike business, and if I wasn't going to go as a team leader, I was going to be the road captain, but I was going to go to the Tour anyhow, you know. And last year was a bit of drama when I didn't go, and I took it. It was hard to keep focus. But
could you watch it?
I did watch some of the stages, but what I did is I wasn't going to the Tour, booked straight away a training camp and went 2 weeks to altitude with the Irish coach, actually, to be able to prepare for the Olympics. So, you know, I didn't kind of sit on the couch and cry. I was like, all right, Tour's gone. That's it. I'm going to show they made a mistake not putting me there, and I'll go flat out and, you know, try and fight for it.
Yeah, so with the Olympics coming up, it meant that you were able to refocus very quickly,
exactly.
Which is probably a very good thing for your own mindset. Yeah. You didn't drive yourself mad sitting at home.
Definitely.
As you said, you're riding for Richie Porte this year, and you've gone into the Tours in previous years as a team leader, and then you had a spell as a domestic prior to that as well. How much difference to your preparation, if at all, does it make, depending on what your role is in the team?
Well, this year I've prepared the Tour as if I was going as a Tour leader.
And why is that in comparison to some other years?
Because some of the years my role was more in the medium mountains, and the team was strategically happy with me riding on flatter days on medium mountains. This year I'm back to what I love, to the high mountains. So the workload is a bit different. Obviously you have to be lighter, so I have to be that extra work with diet and everything. And for me it's quite exciting because I'm back doing what I like, which was climbing. Because at the end of the day, when I started off cycling, I was probably not built to be a climber. I was more, you know, kind of a ruler, a classic rider, and everybody's always, every year comes up and says, but why are you doing the classic? But there was just something that I just loved about the mountains. And some years it was a hit and miss. Some years I was able to climb better than others. And hopefully this year I'll be able to climb as well. But I've done everything right now, and I should be at a decent level in the high mountains.
When Richie is obviously, when he's the team leader and they want to get him as high up the classification as possible, are you able to go into a Tour with personal aspirations, or do they all have to be team-based? I mean, can you think about yourself as the individual in any ways when you're setting your goals and your targets for the Tour?
Not this year. The team is specifically picked for Richie, and, you know, as part of the contract is like, we're in the Tour team, but we're all in for Richie. And it's a big gamble for a team because anything can happen. We could crash after a couple of days. We could crash on the last day and it's all over for nothing.
So you can't target a stage win or anything like that?
Initially, no. Unless, you know, 2014, we were riding 100% for Alberto. He crashed out, and then, we won as a team three stages and Mountains jersey and all that. I didn't get the chance to win the chase, but I had a couple of goes at it. But the initial plan is 100% for Richie, and we all have to commit, and we're all ready to commit.
Is it difficult to do that, though, given it's essentially a similar role to one that you would have performed when you first arrived out into the Tour a few years ago? That, like, do you have to swallow your pride in some way, or do you just accept that this is the territory that goes with being a pro racer?
Yeah, you know, it takes a few years to get into it as well. Obviously, when you're young, you want to give it a go. You want to see your limits, how far you can go. I've been through those phases I saw how far I can go when I was good. I saw how hard it is when I'm not as good. And, you know, I think at the moment, obviously I would have loved to go one more time sooner or later and give it a go on the tour, because, you know, I was 12th and in 2012, and I was just so close to making the top 10. And for sure, if I retire and I haven't made it in top 10, I'll have that in the back of my mind, saying I never really gave it a go to go back for top 10 when I was that close finishing 12th. On the other hand, it's work, and not everybody's a boss in any job. And, you know, I do get my recognition in the work, in the peloton, as a road captain, and I have quite an important role with, you know, choice of the tactics on the road and all that. So in a way, yes, I do have to swallow my ego. I'm not, you know, I'm not the star. I'm not in the media as much. I'm kind of forgotten compared to a couple of years ago where I was more in the headlines. But on other sides, in the business, I have also a lot of gratitude in the work that I do.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long and lengthy career. Your longevity, I guess, is a reward in itself in some ways as well. Can you talk to me about the differences in the peloton now in comparison to when you first found yourself in that situation? I mean, back then, Lance was still riding. While there were obviously doping issues and allegations and scandals and stories that were breaking out sporadically and more frequently as the years went on, the nadir of that has we've gone through it, in that we've finally had the confessions from Lance. We finally, hopefully, found ourselves with a sport that at least is moving some way towards getting rid of the tarnished image that it's had for so long. When you take all that into account, how would you compare just your existence in the peloton? What is it like day to day in comparison to, say, 10 years ago?
Well, for me, it's the same as a general feeling in the peloton. It's true, I agree with you. Back in when I turned pro 2005, at the end of 2004, it was just after the Cofidis scandal. Then came the Puerto affair a couple of years after, the Lance Armstrong story right in the middle, and still ongoing today, because I think he's going to court just in the next few weeks, so it's taking a long time to get that one through. And same with Puerto, you know, it's tried to be every 6 months something. Someone says that they're going to try and reopen the case, even though it was closed by the Spanish government. So yeah, these stories were bigger and more frequent. I think today, obviously, you know, it's I'm not going to say it's 100% clean sport, because that would not be true. I don't know what the guys do at home. I just know that everything is done to make it as clean as possible. And there's always someone that's willing to be smarter. And lucky enough, I think that the government bodies are doing as much as they can. And it is way better and way healthier than what it was back in the days. At least from reading about the scandals, you know, you hear fewer and fewer times riders being caught. But the good thing is, you do hear riders still being caught, because I would be worried if no one was being caught, because like I said many times, a perfect world does not exist, and I do not believe that 100% of a population could be perfect.
If there are no failed tests,
exactly,
that would mean there are no dopers out there.
Exactly, and that the test would not be working. So I'm always happy to read in a way that there are still riders getting positive tests, because it would mean that the system is still working. And happy to also see and feel that things are going a lot better. I think, you know, the biological passport was a big change a couple of years ago. And now, you know, the obviously now they can trace growth hormones and EPO, which were the two main drugs used back in the 90s and the early 2000s. So I think that was the major step.
Is there a fear amongst pro racers nowadays that the evidence that we've seen, whereby the testers and the medical regimes will potentially come back 10, 15, 20 years' time and retest all of the samples that have been taken over a certain period of time, say, for example, to 2010 onwards. And while a rider might think that they've managed to cheat the system today, they may not in 10 years. And whatever legacy they've left, whatever reputation they've built for themselves, and we've seen this in athletics a lot over the last two or three years with reopened tests, that could all be taken away from you. Your reputation may not crumble today, but it could crumble in 10 years' time. Is that something that you think might be at the back of some writers' minds when they're just maybe right on the precipice of considering whether or not they should take something?
It's definitely an extra argument, isn't it? I think now the retroactive testing is something that's great, because there's always that the rider has an extra fear, and I think that's the way it should be. Those people should have the fear of even thinking
the
about
deterrent.
It. Exactly. So, you know, I think it's good, and I think that's also one of the elements that made that is making people think twice or three times about it. But I think also, you know, time is going by and there is a real change of generation. Even 4 or 5 years ago, you know, you still had riders that were in those full-on doping years who were still in the peloton. Maybe they had stopped, but they were still from that
generation. The
connection
was still there.
Exactly. Where today, a lot of them are gone. It's already, you know, I've started 13 years ago now, pro. So
you're one of the L boys on in the peloton.
I'm not one of the L boys, but 70, definitely getting older anyway. But what I'm saying is just like, you know, this guy's now, that there's a 10-year generation gap, and they're new. Most of the guys today that are in the peloton will not even remember most of the riders that I've raced with, you know, apart from the superstars. So there is this change of generation. And lucky enough, they were brought up with these stories, and they were educated towards these stories. Where back in the 90s, there was no education around that. And, you know, they were just like, oh, take this or you fly, and they take it, you know. Where today is like, no, if someone tells you take this, you fly. Don't take it. Read about it. Go on internet. Make sure it's clean, blah, blah, blah. And I think all that background work today is starting to pay as well, thanks to, in a way, to the mistakes of what happened before. And yes, we're still paying the price of that 90s generation or early 2000s generations, but today cycling is much better also because they went through all these years, you know. There's other sports that are just discovering that, or they're opening their eyes saying, oh, there is a bit of doping in our sport, but the truth is it's been like that for years. It's just they hadn't had that scandal that made everybody talk about it or open their eyes, you know.
Finally, we've unfortunately mentioned your age a couple of times. The shelf life of a professional cyclist, generally, what is it? When we said you're turning 33 a couple of days into July, where do you rank in terms of being one of the oldest members of the peloton?
I'm a fair bit down the line. I think the oldest is 41, so I've another few years.
Okay. Yeah. So do you find, as the years have gone on, what it takes to get into the shape, to be at your best, to be able to perform at the ever-increasing levels, do you find it becomes more difficult, or are you still young enough, still in this sort of physical condition whereby you're able to hack the climbs, the training, the conditioning, the winter training just as much as somebody 7 or 8 years younger than you?
Definitely. The only thing is, you know, I feel, you know, for example, a couple of years ago, I could hold a form 3-4 months, where now I can hold a form 2 months. Or it takes me 6 months to get into form, or before it could take me 4 months to get into form. But also, you know, after hard training, when I was younger, I could go home and put a pair of jeans and go for a walk or go for a coffee. Where today, when I do my good hard training, when I go home, the only last thing I want to do is go for a walk, and I just put the movie on and have a rest. So all these things, I do realize that time is passing by, and I have to do more, you know. My first altitude camp was probably 2012. And I was one, and that was the first time I did 2011, and that was the first time I discovered altitude training. I mean, last year I think I did 80 or 90 days in altitude training, just to not for the benefits of altitude, because I don't think they work for a cyclist, because we train so hard that there's no actual physiological changes, but just because there's no other place in the world where you can go 1 hour and a half just up, you know.
Yeah.
Unless you live in the middle of the Alps. So I think that
you're really training for a climb, but
exactly.
It doubles up as altitude training.
Yeah. So that's what I always said. I said for me, the altitude training is great, but only because it's isolation. You know, you're up there. There's no post office. There's no bank. The world could fall apart, and you're still training. You know, where you're home. You have to bring the dog out for the morning walk. You come home after training and you get a receipt in the post. You got to walk to the post office. You go for your grocery. Maybe you have a massage once or twice a week. Where when you're altitude training, you're 100% focused. And I think the main difference is in the actual mountain training and the isolation rather than all the rest, especially for cycling. You know, when you're a cross-country skier, you go up there 3 months and you have a long recovery period and then the work period and all that. So you have a proper adaptation. But the way we do it in cycling, 10 days at 1,800 meters is definitely not enough for any of the changes that they used to talk about in the Bloods, where I strongly believe that the main advantages of altitude training is that mountain training and isolation, where you know all you have to do is worry about cycling, and in the afternoon you're just bored, so you just sleep or read, and that's it. You do, you know, you just recover.
Yeah. Finally, I know we've discussed your role, what that will be at the tour, the Vuelta, towards the back end of August, early September. Do you get more of an opportunity to kind of take on a little more personal ambition, have your objectives a little more front and center? Can you have a real crack at the Vuelta, do you think?
Yeah, hopefully. Definitely, I think that's the plan. Is I put all my ego aside, and my ego is there to support Richie in the tour. And I think as a team, we could do it. And then I'll have a go at San Sebastian just after the tour. That will be my kind of first race back as a captain. I think Van Andermart will be there as well, Greg. And then into the Vuelta, which is my big goal of the year for, as a personal side.
Okay, well, listen, the very best of luck over the coming weeks. Good luck Sunday. Thanks. As you try and retain the Elite Road Race title. And come in and drop into us, and we'll chat to you again soon.
Brilliant, thanks for having me.
Off the Ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.